Hi, and welcome to another edition of our basic instructional series for about policy debate. Glad you could make it and glad that you've made it this far through the instructional series. My name is Alfred C. Snyder. I'm the Edmund W. Lawrence Professor of Forensics at the University of Vermont. And I'm here today with Andy Ellis, techno scribe and debate coach at the Lawrence Debate Union at the University of Vermont, and a philosophically inclined debater.
Indeed.
Today we're going to talk about a basic stock issue in debate called topicality. And the summary here is topicality is about the relationship of the debate resolution to the debate that's happening. And I think that that relationship is quite a central one. If you are telling someone, hey, I'm going to see a debate, why don't you come along with me? The things they would want to know is, what's being debated about and who's debating? Now, we already know who's debating, that's you. But the question is, your debate has to be about the debate topic. And there's some basic reasons for that. The most important being, your debate experience is supposed to be educational. As such, you need to prepare. You need to have an idea of what you're going to be debating about. You need to collect your thoughts. You need to develop arguments. And you need a topic in order to do that. The topic, or the resolution, the words are pretty much the same, topic or resolution, is what the debate is supposed to be about. And it's what the affirmative is supposed to be affirming. And it's what the negative is supposed to be negating. So although you'll be tempted to wander off into other areas of discourse at various times, just remember the topic is really providing the centering point for the debate and what everything is going to be talked about. One of the examples that I give students to students for topicality, and I think they understand it because of their immediate experience, is this. If I was teaching an American history class, and I said, write an essay about the War of 1812, that's your assignment, that's your topic, and you came back and had a paper you had written about the Vietnam War, I would probably give you an F. You'd get an F. You'd flunk, because you didn't follow the topic that I assigned you. Now, that doesn't mean that you couldn't have gotten your way by being smart and being creative. For example, you could have written a paper that said that the War of 1812 and the war in Vietnam have many things in common, and we can learn important lessons about each from looking at the other. Ah, that would be a trick. Then you would be topical. So that it's not so easy to figure out whether the affirmative is topical or not. You have to listen to their story as to why they are, and that will make all the difference. Generally, at the beginning of the debate, the affirmative reads the resolution, but there's no time in which in the first affirmative speech they say, remember, we're topical. Here are three reasons why we're topical. The affirmative generally assumes that they are topical. But of course, the negative uses topicality as a way to attack the affirmative team. They want the affirmative team to flunk the debate. What's the negative really try to do in making a topicality argument?
The first thing the negative needs to do is find a good definition of whatever term it is that they're saying the affirmative violates. For example, if the negative decides to claim that you are violating the United States federal government, then they would find a definition that they believe excludes your case. Or if you're on the negative, you'll want to find a definition that allows you to exclude what the affirmative is doing. That definition is key. The next important step is writing out how it is that the affirmative violates that definition that you set up. At this point, you need to point to specific parts of their plan and show how they don't meet what your definition says those terms mean. If you've done that effectively, you can have an interpretation and a violation which they meet, then the important part of the debate shifts to the standards, because they are likely to say to accept your or to counter your interpretation and your counter definition if you have a good one. Now,
So the negative doesn't really argue that you don't meet the whole resolution.
Right.
The negative will find some part of the resolution and argue that.
Right.
And is it true the argument is if you don't meet each of the words of the resolution, then you're not topical, like one's enough?
Right. I mean, I think that's what negatives want to usually argue, is that by failing to meet one part of the resolution or one part of the topic, then the affirmatives are denied the availability and the possibility to be topical at all because one part is enough. And I think that's a sound argument for negative to make. Otherwise, it would be too difficult for the negative to argue against the affirmative on topicality. We need the others, so don't worry about it, would be the answer that would defeat all negatives on topicality.
So the negative argument starts with them having a definition of some word or phrase in the resolution, mm-hmm. and then arguing that the affirmative doesn't meet that word or phrase in the resolution.
Right.
Now at some point the affirmative will probably have their own definition.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the negative definition and the affirmative definition. And that's where what Andy already mentioned, the standards or the reasons to prefer mm-hmm. one definition over the other. Because in the debate, if you have two definitions facing each other, you have to decide which one's the best or persuade the judge which one is the best. And so there are a lot of different ways in which you can say that your definition is better than theirs. One of those is simply to argue that your definition is more precise. It's specific. It says exactly what this word means instead of being vague and suggestive and indefinite. So that you can argue that our definition is better because it's more specific.
I think another one of those that goes along with the precision of their definition or your definition is the bright line standard. This argument says that their evidence and their definition must set up a clear bright line so that the affirmative and the negative can both know when they are in fact topical. It should, for example, say something, it should make a definitive statement and say, for example, that academic policy is, or secondary education is only high school. In that case, it sets up a bright line where you get to see for your research burden and for the other reasons what would be topical and what would be not by that interpretation.
Or, for example, on the high school resolution for this year about educational reform, it talks about academic achievement,
mm-hmm.
and the negative could have a very specific definition that set a bright line that says sports is not part of academics.
Right.
So that way, anybody who had an affirmative case that was about sports, you have a very bright line to show that that's not academic.
Right.
Well, one of the other ways that you can compare definitions is based on the context and where the evidence is the definition itself comes from. Most often we use dictionary definitions, but sometimes it's better to use a definition that comes from, let's say, a dictionary about the area that's being debated, the Educational Policy Dictionary. Or, for example, a lot of times in congressional documents, they will say, by educational policy, we mean,
right.
and they'll define it. And once again, where does that definition come from? Not from some like paperback dictionary, but from government policymakers who are talking about education policy. So a lot of times you have to look at the context of where the evidence is coming from.
I think that the next area that you need to look at when crafting or having standards debates and reasons to prefer debates is debatability. What does your interpretation allow to be debated, and how does that affect the amount of research you do? For example, if they have an interpretation which allows too much in, and you think that you would have to do too much research to stay on top of it, you might want to make the argument that that amount of research that you have to do vastly skews the amount of your ability to debate within the course of this round. Other debatability arguments are that their interpretation of it makes their affirmative not debatable because you don't have the ability to make certain kind of arguments that you would run normally as part of your strategy or that you believe that you should be able to run on the negative. And I think that the debatability standard is a really important one because it shows what the impact of you should craft it in a way to show what the impact of their position is on this particular debate round. And I think that that will help people be convinced to vote for you on topicality. And we'll talk more about voting when we get down after the rest of the standards.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The thing with debatability, and let's see if this meets your standard. The high school resolution has educational policy.
Mm-hmm.
And you could define educational as everything. Like, everything's educational. I learned from walking to school. I learned from eating a hamburger. I learned from watching the debate instruction tape. Everything is educational.
Right.
But that pretty much makes the topic undebatable.
Right.
Because it's everything.
The negatives in that case would want to argue that it only makes it debatable for the affirmatives because they get to choose their affirmative before they come in, and they have a relatively infinite amount of prep time compared to the negatives. Whereas in that case, the negative would have to be prepared to debate everything, and that's too restricting on both negatives.
Mm-hmm. Andy, we hear this concept of ground. Mm-hmm. That the topic, and in some ways, I understand it pretty well, that the topic sets the ground for the debate. The debate has to take place on the ground of the topic, but it's used a lot in comparing definitions.
Right, and I think that this has a lot to do with debatability, but it stems into other areas. It says that the ground type of arguments say that the affirmative interpretation or the negative definition overlimits what it is that is strategically available to the affirmative or to the negative. For example, if the affirmative definition on the high school topic was the United States federal government included the states as well, the negative would argue that that takes away their ground to challenge U.S. federal government with a state counterplan, and that ground is something that has to be there, otherwise the resolution hasn't divided fairly the debate up for everyone. And I think that the argument with ground is that by disrupting it or by skewing it unfairly in favor of yourself, you make the debate unfair. You win for that argument for a lot of the same reasons you win the debatability argument, because it makes it impossible for you to debate, and it increases your research burden in a way that you can't be prepared and you can't have a good debate if they're taking away the debate that you had planned on through their topicality interpretation. Mm-hmm.
And the last part of the negative topicality argument that you would make in the first negative constructive speech is you would argue that topicality is a voting issue, that if the negative wins the issue of topicality, they win the debate. Now, I always hear affirmative teams say the same three or four things all the time. One of them that they always say is that it's a social contract. When you agree to come to the debate tournament, the invitation to the debate tournament says, we will be debating this topic. And so when you show up, and when you show up to affirm, when you look at the pairings and see you're at the affirmative, you agree to go there and affirm the topic. So if you don't, then you flunk and lose the debate.
Right. I think that while that standard is giving way to more voting issues coming out of the standards that you read, for example, if you're reading a ground or a precision standard, I think that you would like to craft your voting issues around their violation of those particular standards. It keeps the debate simple and it keeps it focused, and you don't have a whole bunch of different reasons for voting than you do for preferring your interpretation.
One of the other voting issues you always hear is that we need to make this a voting issue so that we can have a good debate. Mm-hmm. Other people need to know, and really the affirmative messed up the debate by not arguing a topical case, and you know that you, as the negative team, can't be educated sufficiently by the debate if they don't know what's going to happen, and it's unfair to them. If you prepare to debate academic achievement, and you show up, and the affirmative team wants to talk about water pollution, it's really unfair to you, because you as a negative prepared to debate about education. Now, it's not an extreme example, but it's also true. If you prepared to debate academic achievement, and they showed up and they talk about sports, that's also unfair to you, because you didn't prepare to debate sports. You just prepared to debate what you thought was academic.
Right. The way that the voting issue sets up in my mind is that it's almost the explanation of why it is that you are not well researched on their case. And while as long as debate is a game, they are making it so that that game is unable to be played fairly. It's like if you were playing Risk and the other country got twice as many armies as you did, you would never be able to win that debate. And that's what the argument is on the voter on T, is that there's no way that you can possibly win this debate on the other issues. You must prove that their violation, that their failure to uphold the topic is the reason that that's the case.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And of course, it can be messy, because what you're really arguing about is the meaning of words, mm-hmm. and the meaning of meaning. And when we argue about the meaning of the meaning of meaning, it gets kind of sloppy. But one thing that you can keep in mind is, if you're having a hard time sorting it out, is If the debate topic was a paper assignment that the teacher had handed out, then you could be able to defend, yes, the teacher should accept my affirmative case mm-hmm. as meeting that paper topic, or as a negative, you could say, no, the teacher should not accept. A very common negative strategy in most debate rounds, the negative will make some kind of topicality argument. Mm-hmm. And the reason they do that is because they can win the debate on it. If the affirmative mishandles the topicality argument, they will lose.
Right. Topicality is really a win-win argument for the negative to make, because if the affirmative messes it up, then they get the benefits of having that other argument in the round, and if they don't mess it up and answer it sufficiently, then it goes away and doesn't damage the negative at all. But then the affirmatives have to be very ready to debate it, because if you will debate it every round, then it does have that impact. So I guess the next thing is, what does the affirmative do?
What does the affirmative do when all of a sudden the negative argues that they're not topical? I think the first thing you want to do is to understand what their argument is. Now, generally, you do understand they say, here's the word we think you violate, and here's the definition of it, and here's why we think you don't meet that definition. But sometimes it's not all that clear. Because you could lose the debate easily if you're affirmative and you misinterpret the topicality argument, I think you want to make sure that you know what it is so that you can answer it properly. But not everybody agrees.
I think that you need, that the one thing that you definitely need to do on the affirmative in the cross-examination is just ask simple fact-based questions about which each of the violations are in their topicality argument so that you don't lose on a violation that you didn't think you were entering. Some affirmative or some negatives will put multiple words within the same topicality trying to trick you into entering only one of them. But you need to ask questions in the cross-ex about what those violations are, but I think after that you need to leave the topicality alone in the cross-ex, because if you don't understand it, it's likely that the judge doesn't understand it either. And what if you give them that chance in the cross-examination to explain, then they get to explain the argument before you do. Otherwise, if you leave it alone, as I think you should do, you end up having the 2AC to be the first person to explain that argument. And I think that that's very helpful when debating topicality. So we disagree there, but
that's fine. That's what debate's
all
about.
That's what debate's all about.
Okay. Let's first talk about how to answer specific violations, and then we can talk about the standards or counter-standards arguments. Generally, when you're affirmative, they claim there's some word that you don't meet, they explain the violation, and they have a definition. I think that one of the most important things that you need to have in the affirmative, you need to have a definition of that word that is sympathetic to your approach,
right,
that works for you. So you should probably, as an affirmative, have a definition, a friendly definition, of every major term in the resolution so that you're able to defend against any of these topicality arguments.
Right.
In answering specific topicality violations, I think there are three different things that you can do. And you should try to do all three of these. The first is, you should say, here's our definition of the word, and we meet that definition. Oh, our definition of academic includes sports. It doesn't exclude it, it includes sports. So therefore, we would meet our definition. So that's the first way. Have a definition and explain why you meet it. Second thing you can say is, you can look at the negative definition and say, well, we meet your definition. Your definition says academics involve classroom activities and physical education. Well, sports are physical education. So you could try to find a way that you meet their definition. You're really in good shape if you meet yours and you can figure out a way that you meet theirs. You're a long way towards defeating this argument. The third and final thing you can say is, we don't have to meet your definition because it's a bad one. Ours is a good definition. Yours is a bad one, so we should reject yours. So in answering topicality on the affirmative, have a definition of the word always. And then say, one, we meet our definition. Two, we meet your definition. Of course, you have to explain a reason why.
Right.
And you can just make that up. That's what debate's all about, but that's also what debating about the meaning of words is. Mm-hmm. Meaning is found within people. not within words. We give meaning to words. So go ahead and spin a story about number two while you meet their definition. And third, you should say that their definition is a bad one. But then we're back to the position of arguing whose definition is better, ours or theirs. And that brings up the idea of counterstandards.
Yeah, and I think that with your counterstandards, what you want to do is directly engage them in their standards as much as possible. For example, if they say that they provide better precision, I think that you should always say on the affirmative, you should make some argument about either why you provide better precision or providing better precision is bad for topicality and for understanding the true meaning. And I think that if you tailor your answers directly to the standards that they give, that makes the debate on topicality a lot more focused. That doesn't mean that you have to limit your answers and counterstandards to what they say, but you should always at least answer all of theirs. And then if you have some other reason that you'd like to spell out for why you think your definition should be preferred, then I think you should put that after answering all of their arguments.
Also, you really have to look out, because the one thing about debate is people make debate arguments that are self-serving, mm-hmm. that help them. So the negative will say lots of things like, well, if you're ever unsure, vote negative. Or the ever popular, the affirmative has to be 100% topical. Or if there's any doubt in your mind, vote negative. Or something like that. And you really need to be on the watch out for those kinds of standards and show how they're unfair and unreasonable.
Right. And I really think that you need to, by answering their standard carefully and by going through the debate and having your arguments well crafted ahead of time about why you think your interpretation is good, you'll be able to focus the whether or not the debate should be a reason to vote based on the debate that goes on within the course of the standards debates. And I think that that is the best way to be able to focus whether or not we should vote on this. Like if they argue that they don't have the ground to run disadvantages and counterplans, yet they continue to do so, I think you can say, look, there's been no abuse in this round. We are still able to run our argument and they're able to have a debate with us on it, which means that there's no reason to vote in this round. And I think that those arguments are very effective in showing why it's not as important as the negative would like to say it is.
Mm-hmm. Finally, I guess the affirmative could argue that topicality is not a voting issue. Now, everything's debatable. The negative said it was a voting issue. And so the affirmative can come back and say, well, it's not a voting issue. So what if we're not topical? We shouldn't lose.
Right.
And what they're saying is, so what if my paper's about the war in Vietnam? It's a good paper, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can make that argument, but it's hard to win that argument.
It's hard to win that argument if you're not making specific extrapolations from the standards and the reasons that you set up to prefer your definition. But I believe that that debate is very winnable on both sides if you can prove some of the arguments internal to the standards debate. So,
Well, let's talk about how to... We know how to make the argument on the negative, and we know how to answer it on the affirmative. What's some advice on winning it on the negative? And I guess the big thing I would say is you got to invest some time in it.
Yeah, you certainly have to invest some time in it. Well, I'm not certain that you have to invest the entirety of your time in it. I think the majority, at the least, of your time in the 2NR should be invested in topicality. Now, if there's been a big topicality debate previously in the round and it's been an important issue, then you're going to want to just go to that in the second negative rebuttal, because you can focus your time and you can finally bring that explanation to the judge that they may be confused about, and you force the other team to be able to defend their topicality arguments for 5 minutes. Now, it's a lot easier for you to attack those arguments for 5 minutes than it is for them to be able to answer them. And I think that that puts you in a strong situation in that case.
Mm-hmm. I think the other thing you have to watch for on the negative is all three ways that they can beat you.
Mm-hmm.
They can beat you with their own definition, they can beat you by showing that they meet your definition, or they might be able to beat you by showing that your definition is unreasonable. So make sure that you've got all three of those escape hatches for the affirmative nailed shut.
Right, because just like the negative can win the round by winning just topicality, the affirmative can win topicality by winning one of those three issues. So the trick that you get a chance to play on the affirmative is when you're negative with this win-win type of argument goes away at the point that you choose to only go for that in the 2NR. That doesn't mean don't just go for it and do an R. It means be ready for that to happen and back up those loose ends. Make sure you're taking care of all that, and the judge knows all of those arguments.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's finish then by talking about some very common errors that novice debaters make, common errors that you should avoid. And the one you really should avoid is, in second affirmative constructive, don't ignore the negative topicality argument. If you don't answer the negative topicality argument in second affirmative constructive, you will lose the debate. So answer it first. Don't say, oh, I've run out of time and I haven't answered topicality. I guess I'm going to lose.
Now, along those lines, make sure that you answer each part of their violation and that you're not answering a topicality different than the one they're running. You may very well, by the time you start going to later tournaments, have answers written to certain topicalities, but you need to make sure that they answer the direct violation that the affirmative gives you. Otherwise, that's a clear word the negative gives you. That's another easy way for affirmatives to win rounds, and there's not a lot you can do about it.
Well, I don't want to repeat myself, but I will. Then don't drop the topicality argument in first affirmative rebuttal, either.
Yep.
If you're in first affirmative rebuttal and they're still arguing topicality, if you drop that argument, we will lose the debate. So my advice is, when you're affirmative, always answer topicality first, and then you will never drop it. You'll always get to it.
As long as they're engaged in topicality, you need to engage in your next affirmative speech.
Yep. Another one is affirmative teams that attempt to answer the topicality argument without having their own definition. Mm-hmm. The negative is going to pick a definition that is not sympathetic to your cause. So you need to find your own definition that you can use that's sympathetic to you. All these words have so many different definitions. Find one that works for you. Don't be trapped into not having a definition of your own and having to use theirs. One more would be dropping the voter.
Dropping the voter. A lot of times, negatives do not extend the voting issue if the affirmative doesn't go after it. And if you're the affirmative in that case, you need to point that out clearly, because there's no reason any longer that the judge should consider this position. Also, in the negative, make sure that you're extending the voting issue every round, because topicality only has the effect that it does on the affirmative because it's a voting issue. At every speech, you need to not just extend, but also explain the reason why topicality is still a voting issue.
So topicality can be messy, it's semantic hair-splitting, it's debating about the meaning of meaning, but that's important. We need to debate about what words mean so that we understand their power and are able to control them.
It can also be fun, and it can be a great way for you to get into certain parts of the topic. If it's something that you're interested in, by all means, go forward with researching it, because it is an interesting debate.
And ultimately, it helps control the affirmative. Mm-hmm. The affirmative doesn't want to talk about what you're prepared for. They want to talk about something else, something weird that you're not prepared for. And the way for you to equalize that mismatch is to make sure you can argue topicality. Well, thanks a lot for watching this semantically oriented portion of our instructional series. Thanks a lot, Andy. We'll see you on a future episode. We'll see you there, too. Keep debating. Don't give up. Thank you.